This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Bring it fast. Bring it to the bank. Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are here with the very first podcast of the beginning of the 2020-2021 season cycle. We are joined by John McKenzie. You can find on Twitter at John_McKenzie, and also is a part of All Stats, Aren't We?, which is a Leeds-based stats site, I would assume, based on the name. Feel free to correct me there. But John, exciting to have you on. We, of course, spoke on the Bundesliga show that we had, and now your Leeds have been promoted up to the Premier League. It's been a minute. For those that don't particularly recall Leeds' presence in the top tier, what's happened in your time away, and how are you getting ready for the Premier League season?
How long have you got in the time that we've been away? 16 years since we've been gone. But most people will remember Leeds for the fact that they did a Leeds, coining the phrase back in 2004. They dropped out of the Premier League back then because of huge financial mismanagement, which basically ruined the infrastructures of the club. So the last 16 years have been slowly trying to claw that back through various nefarious owners and various inept managers and various generally quite poor players. So the tide is turning, hopefully, and but we'll get on to speak about that. But we had obviously the tide really only turned once we received Marcelo Bielsa into the managerial chair at Leeds, and yeah, he's the reason why we are where we are, and he's the reason why we run a stats and tactics site, because I don't think we would have been doing that for some of the other managers that preceded him. So yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride the last two seasons. Everyone will know the sort of ups and downs of the season before we went up, but this season just seemed a little bit more of a march towards the finish line. Well, maybe we dragged ourselves a little bit, but yeah, it's great to be back in the Premier League and finally playing some football teams in the top of the English divisions.
Yeah, it was certainly an interesting year down in the championship. You end up topping the heap, of course, and coming through winning that particular title. What did you make of the championship season on the whole? And then how did Bielsa's tactics affect that, as you mentioned, how important he was in the promotion itself?
Yeah, it was an interesting season. So we started off at a real pace, and looking at the underlying numbers, looked like we were just going to roll home in first position. And I guess looking back on the table now, we finished 10 points clear, so that looks like we did sort of roll home. But we had very much a blip in the middle of the season. After the first 10 games, we lost quite an important central midfielder called Adam Forshaw, and after we lost him, we lost quite a lot of control, and we had a little bit of a blip where I think we got a little bit psychologically overawed by a few poor results. It all started off with we were 3-0 up against Cardiff City, and ended up drawing 3-3, which is not our finest hour. And I think because of the blip that we'd had the season before, a few of those psychological nightmares returned. But we managed to turn the ship around, and in the end, like you say, we did finish top of the pile. And it was quite an exciting end of the season. Obviously, the lockdown affected things. I think we would probably have been quite comfortable had it not been for the lockdown. We came into the lockdown on the back of five wins in a row. And then we started off post-lockdown with a loss against Cardiff City, again, our bogey team. So, but fortunately, we sort of steered the course. And although Brentford gave us a really good run for our money, everyone's money money, to be honest, including West Bromwich Albion, who eventually joined us in the automatics. Yeah, it was a good end to the season, and I think we deservedly went up. And those tactics were fundamental. We were a dominant side in the Championship, in the same way that Manchester City are. If you look at the underlying numbers, we control the ball, we control possession, we create a lot of chances, and we don't give many away. So it's going to be fascinating this season, seeing what happens when we are embracing the sort of underdog status a little bit more in games.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating. And I know as a neutral, seeing somebody like Bielsa in the Premier League is something that I've long wanted. And to see him come up with Leeds to do it, I think is going to be something a lot of people would be very interested in watching. And I'm certainly interested, as you say, in how those tactics play out. Obviously, the squad may be not as strong as other clubs. We've seen teams like Fulham, the last time they came up, overspend, try to stay up. That didn't work. Aston Villa did the same thing, managed it thanks to a Hawkeye decision, but also obviously of their own merits for a lot of the season. If you had to guess, which direction do you think you would go? The kind of overinvestment, maybe the squad isn't good enough, or maybe stick with the people that got you up, kind of more in a Sheffield United kind of vein?
Yeah, so there's a few things here. The first of which I would say is Marcelo Bielsa doesn't like a big squad, which is, I think, neat passing somewhat, because a lot of the time on AllStats, we talk a lot about the actual squad build-up, and a lot of people assume that because we're a little bit critical of the way that Leeds have done things, that we are therefore anti-small squads. But we're talking like a really small squad here. And so one of the issues we have at the moment is with centre-backs. So we had basically three centre-backs who you would be happy to start with last season, and then a couple of youth backups who we barely used, to be honest, probably less than 50 minutes between them. One of those centre-backs is Ben White, who has been in the news a lot, who was on loan from Brighton. We don't know if we're going to get him. I suspect we probably won't get him. So we've lost him. The other centre-back was Gaetano Berardi, who's a sort of bit part player, played most of his career on as a fullback, but has filled in quite well for us as a centre-back. And in the penultimate game of the season, he blasted his ACL open, so he will not be playing at all this season. So we've lost two centre-backs, and allegedly we're only bringing one centre-back in, which is really quite tight, to be honest with you. The reasons given are that Bielsa doesn't like a big squad. He likes to work with fewer players. He doesn't like to have players sat on the bench who expect minutes. But in this situation, I think, given that we play back threes not insignificant number of times in the last season, means that you've got basically two centre-backs who you're happy to start with, and then a youth player who is probably going to be Pascal Struijk, who is, he's plays for the Dutch youth teams, or has done, but he's actually Belgian. But we played him as a replacement for Calvin Phillips, the defensive midfielder, in the last few games of the season. So it's a really tricky one, because you get a lot of the fans saying, well, you know, it's good to use youth, which obviously we agree with, but there's a sense in which you don't really want to be blooding youth in the back two of a back four when your first match is Liverpool away. So I think there's no danger that we're going to overspend. That's certainly not going to happen. We will rely on players that we've brought through. And, you know, this is the sort of pact with the devil that was made. You know, you bring in Bielsa in order to not have to spend so much on players, or at least that was the angle in the Championship. Throwing money at players wasn't working. Buying players cheap from foreign markets and trying to get value there through getting prospects wasn't working. So they instead threw the money at Marcelo Bielsa and his coaching staff. And that brings with it, obviously, the fact that he's one of the best managers in England at the moment. But the cons that, you know, you then therefore, I think, lose a little bit of control through your director of football, because he actually has to cede control of the squad building. And so we're in this sort of weird scenario where Bielsa will only renew his contract every year, and you don't know if he's going to be there the next season. So you end up with a sort of very, very thin, bare-bones squad. And should he leave, I suspect we'll have a sort of mini Wenger leaving Arsenal / Sir Alex Ferguson leaving Man United type crisis, where, you know, the squad He's just sort of been riding off the back of the fact that their manager is able to hold everything together at once. So hopefully that answers your question, but it's a fairly complex sort of situation at Leeds at the moment. So I don't think we'll spend huge amounts of money. The areas where we're spending money are in wide areas. And why I think the reason we're doing that is because we didn't score enough goals from wide areas. And so I think the thinking is that we're going to have to be quite tight in the middle. So we're going to have fairly prolific wide players. So we've been looking at players like Saeed Benrahma from Brentford, but also players like Harry Wilson, Liverpool, I suppose, but he was at Bournemouth on loan last season. And then players like Ryan Kent at Rangers too, none of which are particularly awe-inspiring for the fan base. But I think it's just a case of we're not going to spend a huge amount of money, but we are going to bring in players who, if needs be, we could put them in wide areas and hopefully get a little bit more of return for investment than we did from our wide areas this season.
Well, you can have Jack Clark back, who didn't start for you.
We do not want him.
Yeah, that was a very weird one for Tottenham to purchase.
Yeah, really interesting.
Do you think you could afford the wages of maybe like a Ryan Fraser, who expected the big clubs to come sniffing around but didn't come after him, but is available on a free?
Would I want him? Again, he's sort of one of those guys who fits into that group that I've already mentioned, right? The players who would probably give us a decent return for investment. He's maybe not scoring so many, but certainly assists wise with Ryan Fraser. I haven't heard any rumors with him, so I'm expecting him not to be on that list. But yeah, it's a fascinating summer really in terms of what we've heard coming out of the Leeds camp from our end, from our sources. The club have been very quiet. They've really not done a huge amount of announcements on any sort of area of the club. And so I think the fan base are getting fairly restless, but I don't expect us to bring many, many people in, to be honest. And I think we're going to rely on the fact that we do have what do we call it these days? An identity, not a philosophy, but yeah. We have an identity and we have a system and the players know how the system works. And I think the hope is that you can do that thing where you go into a league and people aren't expecting the system that you play, and then maybe you have a good first half of the season just because of your outlier status. Maybe clubs will figure us out a little bit more in the second half, but you will hope to have done enough in that first half to stay up in the long run. So I think that's going to be the approach that we take going into the Premier League.
Yeah, I just pulled the Ryan Fraser thing out of thin air just because you mentioned you might need a cheap wide player. And I was like, hey, there's a pretty good one out there on a free right now. You already name dropped Calvin Phillips, who's obviously terrific in defensive midfield, and Ben White, who you may or may not get back. What other players should neutrals be keeping an eye on from the lead squad?
I'd love to say Ben White at this point, but I suspect he'll be playing in the Premier League in some guise or another, so do keep an eye out for him. He was an absolutely fundamental part of our defence, but his defensive partner and our captain, Liam Cooper, has come on leaps and bounds under Marcelo Bielsa and really fits into his system. Other than that, obviously Pablo Hernandez is going to be interesting to see back in the Premier League. He's now at a point where I don't think we'll see him playing full games. We spent most of the final run of the season bringing him on for second halves of games because he has quite a fragile hamstring, but he's still one of the most creative players in English football, and I think that it'll be good to see him back on the top stage. And then beyond that, I'd say probably Luke Ayling, actually, our right back, who again is another player who's been incredible since Marcelo Bielsa arrived, and has really become a really brilliant sort of flying fullback. Has a huge amount of ground to cover and does that really well. And you know, he's almost become like a late stage Marcelo for us. Gets very long and gets very deep into the opposition half and then makes long busting runs back to defend. So watching Leeds is going to be entertaining this season. There will be goals one way or another, and there's some fun players to keep eyes out for.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, well, we'll certainly do that. We already talked a little bit about potential incomings, but I'm also curious about a potential outgoing, which was Jean-Kevin Augustin, who there are lawsuits being bandied about. Is he still at the club? Is he left? Will he be back next season? What's the status of that at the moment?
Yeah, no one really knows, to be honest. It's become very much a legal issue. So the situation with him was that he was brought in on loan in January and had fitness issues ostensibly and never quite made it into the team. He had a few substitute appearances, but I think very quickly fell out somehow with Marcelo Bielsa, or the club certainly made the decision that they didn't want to bring him back next season. This is all well and good, but they had a buy-on clause that was to be enacted if Leeds were promoted. Leeds's argument is that clause wasn't enacted because we weren't promoted by the time that the contract ended.
Ooh, because of the COVID pause.
COVID, yeah, exactly. So I think it's a bit of a naughty move from Leeds, but obviously RB Leipzig are claiming that the contract was watertight enough that should still mean that Leeds have to pay up for Augustin. So we're in this sort of horrible position now where it's going to go through the law courts, and I suspect Leeds will have to pay some sort of compensation, but I can't remember the fee off the top of my head for Jean-Kevin. But
it's like 20 million or something.
Yeah, it's up there in the 20 million brackets, which is not great to be paying out for a player that Bielsa has made very clear that he doesn't want in the squad now. So I don't think it's going to be the case that if Leeds are forced to pay the money, they just say, well, we'll pay it and take him on. This is very much a case of them paying whatever compensation they have, and I suppose him becoming a free agent or staying at RB Leipzig. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mess, and it's not very helpful when, as we're talking about, you're trying to go through the transfer window and build the squad a little bit. So, yeah, it's a little bit of an unsavory issue, and it will rumble on for a little bit longer, I suspect.
Yeah, and you got to imagine that's kind of affecting some transfer plans if you're worried that you're going to have to pay anything near that for a player that you might not actually have at the club next season. What other positions do you think you might see additions, and maybe what positions do you think you might see departures in terms of players that were good enough for the championship squad but perhaps might not make the grade back up in the Premier League?
I don't think we'll be losing many players. I think the only players who will be players who go out on loan because they don't feel as though they're going to get enough minutes, and those will be youth players. In terms of bringing players in, I think there's probably a gap between what I think we should bring in and what they actually do bring in. So the noises that have come out of the Leeds camp have been that we are going to get a centre-back, we are going to get a wide player on the left, and we're also going to get a sort of Pablo Hernandez replacement who will be able to take up some of the minutes that he'll be giving up this season. So those are the three places that I think we'll see people brought in. We've already brought in a youngster called Joe Gelhart, who is a forward from Wigan. So we got him on the cheap because of the Wigan's unfortunate financial situation. And then we've sort of bumped up a few from loans to buy. So Helder Costa was a loan to buy, and we've paid for him. And our goalkeeper, Ilan Melier, who was on loan last season, is now being bumped up as well. And then Jack Harrison, we had on a weird loan to buy option, which I don't think was brought through.
But then you got him back on loan anyway.
Yeah, we've got him back on loan anyway. So rather than paying straight up for him, I think, again, they've just tried to amortize the finances a little bit by keeping him on loan because City are happy for him to stay with us. So, yeah, I think it's not going to be a hugely exciting transfer window for us this season, as I don't think it will be for a lot of clubs in the Premier League. But I think, again, the fans are probably a little bit disgruntled about this because, you know, when you spend 16 years out of the Premier League and then you finally get in, you sort of want some kind of marquee signing. And I'm not sure whether or not that marquee signing will actually arrive.
Yeah, well, perhaps not marquee, but I know as a Spurs fan, there's been lots of rumors about Bielsa wanting Juan Foyt for a while now. Also, a certain center back from a certain German club that you may or may not support being bandied about as well. You said that you might need a center back. Perhaps if you loaned Foyth and Botkoch, that would kind of solve that issue?
Yeah, although I did notice that Foyth played yesterday and got a fairly delicious assist.
Sure did.
So I don't know. You'll know better than me what his looking at Spurs will be, but we'll definitely take Juan Foyth. I think his profile is very similar to Ben White's. The problem is, and I've been doing a bit of scouting for Allstats, and we put out a scouting report every week if we can on some kind of linked player, and so I've been looking at Robin Koch from Freiburg, who you mentioned there as well. And we have looked at Foyth before, and Foyth follows that profile really nicely. So I would happily take Foyth. I would happily take both of them, to be honest, on straight up buying options. I know that the Sun was banging on about Foyth being available for about 15 million. And so I think, and Robin Koch has been allegedly touted at about 10 million, so 25 million for two centre backs, I think would be perfectly fine. And you know, we're already talking around that sort of fee for Ben White anyway. The problem with Ben White is that you're talking about a player who's already a generational talent. As far as I'm concerned, he will be playing for an elite team within the next few years. He will be a starting centre back for England at some point, I have no doubt. And so it's quite hard to actually determine who's going to be good for the system or who's going to be a good replacement for him, because no one that we're going to be able to get is going to be as good as he is. Robin Koch is an interesting one. He's not quite the same profile at all as Ben White. He's a bit more of a ball player than a ball carrier, which is Ben White's. Brilliant at dribbling the ball. He's excellent in defensive situations where he's sort of one-on-one and he can sort of beat the press of an opposition player and carry it around them and continue the build-up play from there. Robin Koch is a little bit more hesitant on the ball in terms of the build-up play, but he's a much better defender. He's much better in the air than Ben White. Ben White's weakness is his aerial play. So it's going to be fascinating if we do bring in Koch, because I think a lot of people will expect him to be a like-for-like replacement, and I don't think he will be. Now, that doesn't mean to say that he won't fit in the system, and the question is always, you know, how do you get what you want out of the system depending on who you've got in there? The system is very flexible, and it depends on who is in that system as to how it actually looks as a collective. So it will be fascinating seeing who they bring in through as a centre-back. And, you know, I'd be happy with Koch at 10 million, but I would be happy with him as a third centre-back, and then have another sort of maybe slightly more marquee centre-back who is ahead of him. And then you've got three potential starting centre-backs and then a youth player backing up in that situation. So if you play a back three at any point, you've got the option, if one of the players gets injured, to bring through. But we really didn't struggle with injuries, to be honest, at centre-back last season. So we were quite lucky. Ben White played every minute of the Championship. And I think a lot of fans are just assuming that whoever we bring in isn't going to get injured. And that's where, for me, the worry comes in with only bringing in one centre-back. Because Liam Cooper gets injured, which he often does. He misses about 10 games a season, pretty much. If he's injured and then we bring in a player, and we know that Bielsa takes a while before he's happy to put players in the starting 11 anyway, we could go into against Liverpool with like a youth player and a new centre back, which could be quite nerve-wracking for us,
especially with a 3-week preseason.
Yeah, no, exactly. And against that front three. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. And, you know, my disappointment with the club is that the director of football isn't able to really balance off Bielsa's need for a small squad and say, well, look, you're not going to be around forever. So you've got to give me some kind of leniency with squad building for the future. But, you know, Bielsa is Bielsa. And the reason why he's still here is because the club have been quite deferential to him. So it's just a sort of catch-22 situation, really.
Yeah, not to make this about Tottenham, which, as you know, I do often, even on shows about German football. But regarding Foyth's availability, he is currently Tottenham's fifth center back in the priority ranking there, and he's eating up a international, or more specifically, non-homegrown spot. Right. So I think it's very likely that he's loaned out, a little less likely that he's full-on sold. But I do not expect him to be in the squad past October 5th, which I believe is the transfer deadline. So he should be available because Tottenham basically need to sell international players to bring in international players at this point, such as our homegrown situation. If you do address some of these key issues and you do avoid the injury bug, as you kind of mentioned there, what are your expectations and maybe the general fan expectations, though they may be juxtaposed, for the coming season?
Well, look, I'm a man who looks at the statistics and looks at the tactics and stuff. So what I'll give you is a best case scenario and a worst case scenario, yeah. And then maybe an assessment of how I think the myriad possibilities between those two will stack up. So best case scenario, I think, as I've described it, is we go into the league and we get a certain amount of purchase from the fact that that clubs haven't played against us before, and so our fairly unique tactical approach is able to give us the edge in some games, and so we have a fairly good first half of the season. And then even if, as I've said, clubs then come back in the second half of the season with a bit more of an idea of how best to counter us, we'll have got the points to comfortably stay up. That's the best case scenario. So I think that's sort of finishing, pushing towards mid-table probably. The worst case scenario is that, you know, you go into the first four games and the first game is Liverpool. If you have a poor result there, you then go to Fulham or you have Fulham visiting us. So that's maybe one of our most important games of the season, is the second game of the season, Fulham at home, after having just lost to Liverpool in the first game of the season. You know, anything can happen. If we don't win that game, we then have Sheffield United, who are a tough team to beat now, and then we have Manchester City. So first four games, worst case scenario, you don't win any of those, and you're sitting at the end of the first month of the Premier League season without any points to your name. It's very, very hard to sort of drag yourself back from there, especially after having had the momentum of winning the season before. And so, you know, relegation has to be very much on the cards as well as an option. And to be honest, I think, you know, we've got to be aware of the fact that of all those many, many possibilities between the best case scenario and the worst case scenario, more of them are weighted towards us finishing in the relegation zone than finishing towards the top half of the table. And so I'm trying to be sort of fairly pragmatic about these things. I think Leeds, if everything goes right for them, should be fairly comfortable in the league to stay up. But there's all those possibilities of things that could go wrong. And, you know, like I've said, if we only bring in one centre back and we end up having an injury crisis in that position, things can change very quickly. So I'm plumping very much for 17th is the position that we are aiming for, but there's leniency either way. We could finish much higher than that. I know that Infogol have got us finishing 12th in the table, which obviously we would take quite happily, but at the same time, you know, relegation is a very strong possibility too. So I'm just trying to be pragmatic about these things, and with our fan base, just say you can't just think in terms of the best case scenario, because there's so many different options. So, you know, take the best case, take the worst case, and plump somewhere in the middle with the admission that there are things that probably could be sorted out, like the squad size, and assuming that certain things happen. We all saw what happened with Norwich last season, and you know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, they were naive tactically, as the pundits like to say, but actually if you look at them, they played fine football, they caused teams problems, and they went into lockdown with the possibility, they had a couple of easy games straight out of lockdown, which had they won, they could probably have crept out of the relegation zone. But as it was, they lost those first two games and then sort of plummeted from there. Anything could have happened if the season hadn't gone into lockdown. So, you know, this is with the nature of football. It's a stochastic game. You know, there's a lot of randomness, a lot of chaos there, and Leeds could stay up comfortably or they could go down. And the difference between those two margins is just little things going wrong for them, a little injury here or a player getting upset and wanting to leave in January there, you know, or the sort of runs of form and momentum just not going for us. So yeah, that's a very miserable thing to say as a fan, because I think I'm supposed to be really positive and probably over exaggerate our place. But for us, we're trying to get that fan base very much aware of the fact that, you know, you're looking every game thinking, where are we getting the points from this season? If we do this well, then we'll stay up and we'll deserve to. So rather than just going in being like, oh, we lost to Liverpool, that's it now, we're going to be awful, you have to kind of think of it a little bit more pragmatically and say, well, you know, Liverpool haven't lost Anfield for however many games it is, a very, very long time. That's a game where if you get points out of it, then great. But the games that you are wanting to win are going to be the teams below eighth place. They're the games where you're expected to get your 35 points or whatever it is from. So yeah, it's going to be a very pragmatic sort of attempt to stay in the season, and that's really our priority.
Yeah, so just safety or bust, and then kind of disregard the cup competitions in the pursuit of that goal.
Yeah, I think so. Although, having said that, obviously the Championship has 46 games in it because there's so many teams in it, and that means that with four fewer teams in it, the Premier League gives us a lot more leniency in terms of fixtures. So you never know. There might be some attempt to put in to go for a little bit of a run in one of the two competitions. I don't know how they'll look at it, but I was looking at it. I think the first midweek fixture in the Premier League is somewhere like December, whereas in the Championship, by December, you've played four or five midweek fixtures already. So it's certainly going to be a different pace for Leeds in the Premier League. So they may try and keep that pace up by going for it in the cup competitions as well.
Mm. Yeah, and in this compressed season where you get crazy things like Tottenham playing seven matches in September when the season doesn't start till the 12th, just with everything piled in, you might actually be really well set up to handle that, whereas a lot of sides might not be, especially lower in the table that aren't used to having the European competitions, where December there are loads of match weeks, and all of a sudden, you know, you have a club like Leeds that are experienced in that with that Championship experience and the congested fixture list. So yeah, that might really.
We're also a very fit team as well. Marcelo Bielsa is very on top of nutrition and fitness, and because we play a quite intense defensive game when we're out of possession, it just means that we just have to be really, really super fit. And so again, that could suit us quite well going into the Premier League.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of off-pitch things could really benefit you in terms of how the club's set up, in terms of how you've where you've been playing in the Championship and much of the light. And yeah, Bielsa's tactics, both footballing-wise and also just in all of the facets of being a manager. So I'm optimistic for you. How about that? We'll leave it
Thanks,
there.
Tom.
Hopefully you have good luck this season, and it'll certainly be interesting having Leeds back in the Premier League and then Bielsa along side. So anyway, really appreciate you coming on and talking Leeds with us. If people want to hear more from you, where can they do that?
Yeah, so all the stuff I'm putting out is on Leeds, really, is at All Stats Aren't We on Twitter, which is our channel. So do head over there. We focus on the stats and the tactics, so we put out a lot of sort of breakdowns of what's happened in games. I do a preview every week of the team that we're going to play and how Leeds will probably look to get something out of it. And I just put that up as a thread on the Twitter account as well. So a lot of opposition fans actually quite enjoy that because they like seeing my assessment of what they're doing and then laughing when it goes horribly wrong. So if you are an opposition fan and you want to have a good laugh after Leeds get tanked and I said that they would be brilliant, then do head over there.
If you view your analysis as saying Leeds are going to be brilliant, full stop. Maybe people weren't listening too intently. But absolutely a pleasure having you on. Best of luck for the season. I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Yep.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.